Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Senior Editor Kelly Davio. It's no secret that the biosimilars market in the United States has been off to a sluggish start. In fact, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, MD, went so far as to call the market anemic. While many stakeholders have called for steps like more education or greater regulatory clarity, a new option has been raised in recent weeks, and that's doing away with the U.S. biosimilars market altogether. In a two-part proposal published on the Health Affairs blog, a team of authors argued that efforts to induce lower prices through competition via biosimilars will inevitably fail. Instead, they argue that prices for innovator biologics should be regulated by the U.S. government after patent expiry. This week on the podcast, we're talking with Mark Tresheim, one of the authors of the proposal. He's a biopharmaceuticals consultant and is also the strategic director of the NewDigs program at the MIT Center for Biomedical Innovation and a visiting scientist in applied economics at MIT's Sloan School of Management. Mark, thank you so much for being with us today.
Sure, and thanks for having me on, Kelly. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to everyone that you reach through this podcast.
Let's begin by giving the audience a brief overview of your proposal.
The essence of the articles is that biosimilars for biologics really face phenomenal challenges to be an efficient and effective way to achieve the goal of the large program of lowering the price of the biologics to the lowest economic, marginal fair cost, which is the objective of the policy. And this is due to no fault of the biosimilar manufacturers at all. It's due to the fact that biologics themselves have some innate challenges, which the regulators need to recognize in their processes, that require a phenomenal time, cost, and risk to biosimilar manufacturers to reach the market. And all those added costs limit the kinds of price reductions that biosimilars can reasonably offer to the market, and that actually allows the original manufacturer of the reference product to still enjoy some monopoly pricing rents, if you will. They won't be completely eliminated because the biosimilar companies and competitors can't price given their cost structures coming in. And that's due to the fact that the biologics themselves have scientific uncertainty associated with them. That's a controversial statement, I understand, but it is nonetheless the position of the FDA that is the case, which then leads to all these testing requirements and tracking and different J-codes and all these other things flow from a lot of those unscientific uncertainties, at least as the current system is in place. So rather than trying to make the current system simply more efficient, we think there's actually a faster and easier way to achieve the policy goal of getting down to that economic marginal cost, which is do the same thing for biologics that we used to do for utilities, which is make them a regulated entity from a margin or a price regulation standpoint, that they should still therefore be profitable firms. I know my grandmother loved to get the dividends from her utility stocks, and they were investor darlings for a particular type of investor. So those products would still generate responsible and wonderful financial returns, but it would be both time certain as to when that would kick in, as well as what the formula would be for calculating that proper price would reward the production costs, the marketing costs of those products, as well as the reinvestment in manufacturing capacity for those products so we don't face shortages. So we see that as a sure way to do it. It has some transition challenges. So the proposal also includes buying out all the good faith investments of the current biosimilar manufacturers that have been made most likely by the federal government, and that they also get a fair return on those investments that they've been made, even if those products now would never come to market because we just regulate the prices of the original reference products.
I'd like to zero in on a particular highlight of the blog post that you and your co-authors had in Health Affairs, and that's product substitutability. So that's one of the issues that you and your co-authors raised in your proposal, saying that no biosimilars have yet met the FDA criteria for interchangeability, which of course is the prerequisite for pharmacy level substitutability in the US. But given the fact that the FDA has not yet issued final guidance on interchangeability, to what extent might your comments on substitutability change when the FDA releases that guidance, which many expect to happen next month?
Excellent question. Thanks, Kelly. I think our position remains much the same. So it's the it will, of course, be welcome to the industry to an extent that they now have an interchangeability standard. Our point would be the costs and time and uncertainty of achieving that interchangeability standard makes biosimilars difficult to bring to market. For a clean and efficient competitive market is the ability for substitute products to quickly, surely, and cheaply enter a marketplace. So the classic example, of course, is agricultural products, and whether it's milk or corn or wheat or tomatoes, knowing that you can have another farmer simply grow the crop and sell it into the market with surety and with exactly the same production costs and time to get to market as every other farmer is what makes the market really efficient and gets to that best price. Biosimilar manufacturers, even with the interchangeability standards, face tremendous challenges of getting to market. And we think that limits the price reductions that you can reasonably expect a biosimilar manufacturer to offer, and that those reductions are still significantly above what the marginal economic cost is to the original producer, the original reference product, to be in the market. And therefore, we're going to leave money on the table. And the point of biosimilars is to lower the price to that marginal cost to the reference producer quickly and surely. And even with interchangeability, we just don't think biosimilars can achieve that. Again, through no fault of the biosimilar manufacturers.
If we look at the European context, where there has been what I think many would describe as success with biosimilars, we see that biosimilars are treated as medically interchangeable and substitutable at the pharmacy level in many countries with no statutory requirement for additional data. So is there any argument to be made that the U.S. has a legal problem rather than a scientific problem or a medical problem in biosimilars being substitutable?
So I'm sure it depends on one's perspective as to whether the EU is being more loose and aggressive in protecting its citizens against the biosimilar risks, or whether the FDA scientists and the regulations coming from those scientific views are overly cautious. So I agree with you, Kelly, that if one believes that no additional testing is necessary, that one can easily and quickly get to market, similar to the way small molecule generics get to market within 6 months or a year at a cost of $1 million, maybe $2 million, to be able to do that, then I think our positions might have some change. But we don't see that actually happening, and that we also see that, as Scott Gottlieb pointed out in a tweet in response to ours, he wants to avoid racing to rock bottom prices. We know that in the small molecule generic space, that race to rock bottom prices, particularly through the European style of tender offers that are winner take all, has led companies to underbid, lose their profitability, and then over time lead to loss of competition as companies had to leave the marketplace because the margins were too low. We actually think our approach actually maintains appropriate and reinvestable profitability for the biologics, and therefore also lessens the risk of shortages, although we didn't put that into the two articles that got published.
So if we posit the idea that the U.S. were to move forward with your proposal, with the regulation of the prices of biologics as the alternative to biosimilars, and there's the buyout of the biosimilar development that's taken place in the U.S. so far, if we recognize that many of the biosimilar development programs that we see today are global in scope, what might we expect to happen to markets in Europe or markets in Asia as a result of there no longer being U.S. biosimilar development?
Well, we don't address that. If those markets continue to be large, I mean, certainly the United States is as a fraction of the patients for biologics is a less than half and declining number of patients and doses, then one could hope or expect that biosimilars in those markets would continue their current path, perhaps with slightly less vigorousness because their total market is smaller. But if it's that sensitive to the U.S. dropping out of the market, I think it perhaps proves our point that the biosimilar markets themselves are not really naturally able to be competitive marketplaces, if only taking out, what, a fourth to a third of the doses of the world destroys the biosimilar marketplace, kind of makes our point.
So if we think about U.S. patients again, bringing it back to the U.S. context, what might happen to patients' out-of-pocket costs? And do you see your proposal having an impact on the pain that patients feel at the pharmacy counter?
Well, we think it might indirectly. One of our concerns is that the current biosimilar market, given the way insurance products have been structured in the commercial and Medicare space, is that biosimilars' cost advantages actually have not been flowing through to patients, given their deductible levels for what remain reasonably expensive products. So our proposal would certainly do no worse and could do better because we expect that the prices would fall both somewhat more, and also that we expect that more biologics would see those price declines, because we also observed so far that particularly smaller biologic products with sales of under $1 billion per year are not attracting very much biosimilar interest for products entering. So those products as well would see price declines. Whether those are sufficient to get below the insurance design issues for these patients who still have copays and other deductible ceilings, even co-insurance levels, we didn't examine that. But thus far, we've been saddened by the fact that existing biosimilar discounts don't seem to make it to patients.
So in responding to your proposal, the former FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, MD, did respond to you on Twitter, as you've mentioned already. And one of the things that Dr. Gottlieb said was that biosimilars are taking time, but the generics market also took time to take shape in the United States. And he said that we need to exhibit patience and reasonable expectations. How do you respond to those comments from Dr. Gottlieb?
I think he's correct, and again helps make our case that the current approach is slow and has not been reaching the kind of discounts that Dr. Gottlieb would like to see. Our approach would be more time certain, and because it is a regulatory structure, would be nearly instant as to when it would take place after the appointed hour of exclusivity ending. And biosimilars don't seem to be able to deliver the kinds of price reductions nor speed of adoption. And Dr. Gottlieb, I think, is quite right in his implication that we're leaving, at the moment, a lot of money on the table. Our estimates are it's somewhere between $40 and $60 billion a year. So that's pretty expensive patients.
There's been a great deal of conversation that's been generated by your proposal after it has come out. And you were quoted in a Stat Plus article about this proposal as saying, quote, "If the only social reason we went to biosimilars is to lower price, it just didn't seem like a very safe or effective way to do that," end quote. If we set aside the issue of effectiveness of the strategy momentarily and focus on the safety issue of your comment, are you suggesting that the safety of biosimilars themselves is in question?
Well, the FDA seems to think so because they require so much testing and clinical trials of the biologics. And by definition, those clinical trials are placing patients at risk. If we knew the answer that they were completely safe and also effective, but I believe the guidance and requirements are that you're looking for safety signals as much as you're looking for non-inferiority in those trials. We're in a position today where we put patients at risk in those trials for biosimilars that we apparently don't know if they're safe yet. We suspect that they are, but that we still put those patients through a trial. They are exposed to the risk of those new biosimilars, and they see the opportunity for no increased benefit, because by definition, if the trial runs perfectly, the biosimilar is identical in effectiveness for the patient. These are not biobetters. These are biosimilars that we hope eventually might become interchangeable. So by definition, they offer no new benefit to the patient and may offer some risk. So that seems to be the position we're in. And from an ethical standpoint, we're actually slightly concerned that those are unethical trials.
So my last question for you today, Mark, is asking you a bit to be a little bit of a prognosticator, but how likely is your proposal to be advanced and eventually implemented in the United States? It's a bold proposal. And how much appetite do you see for it among those who make policy?
I think the fact that your listeners are listening to this is encouraging to us that we'll begin the conversation of why are we doing this in the first place, and are biosimilars the most effective way to achieve their only policy goal of lowering prices to the maximum fair extent so that we get economic marginal cost, so we don't run into rock bottom pricing, but do get the most efficient and best price possible for the healthcare system. If this helps highlight what the goals and changes are, or if the scientists come forward and say that we no longer need big testing to do this, then we'll all have played our part in achieving the goal of what we all seem to want, which is the lowest prices possible for biologics after the exclusivity expires. And I think we can all be in agreement that that's the goal of what we're trying to do. And now we're just having a broader discussion on the means. And if that broader discussion gets us to those lower prices faster, better, more sure, in a way that's fair to all stakeholders, it will have been a discussion worth having.
And is there anything else that you'd like to add to this discussion?
Let me offer you this. In our proposal, we're not suggesting that we should have top-down price controls based on discounts that can be very arbitrary. These are not price controls. These are carefully called price regulation, same as what we might have done with utilities in the same spirit, that they're based on the costs, the fully loaded costs of providing these products in a way that enables their producers to make a fair and good profit. to reinvest in the business, particularly in manufacturing capacity, so that we're guaranteed a supply of these products over time at the best available prices. That's what we're advocating. This is not in any way trying to lower prices or drive companies out of business by arbitrary political processes. We have suggested that the algorithms need to be transparent and clear and fair and administered by an independent agency that is not part of the government health and human services or payment process, because you can't have the buyer of the products setting the prices for those products. So we want this to be a quasi-independent agency, much like the Federal Reserve, that would administer this program so that neither industry nor government payers have undue influence over the process. So we've attempted to be very thoughtful in ensuring that the final economics of this work well for all the companies, and that we also allow that the original manufacturers of the products are not required to continue to make them themselves, but are required to sell the business to someone who does wish to operate the business. We understand that companies that prefer to work in innovative products at higher margins may not find these legacy products attractive to keep part of their portfolio, and that they should be free to dispose of them, but they can't just shut them down. They have to dispose of them to other companies that want to operate them, much like what we do in antitrust cases, where for a merger to go through, we regulators occasionally require the spin-off of certain aspects of a business to a willing buyer. And so we're borrowing a bit from those concepts. So what I hope to leave your listeners with is this is not an anti-industry or an anti-pharma company in any way kind of proposal. We're actually in some ways trying to be extraordinarily fair to this industry and avoid the competitive pressures that at times have led generic small molecule manufacturers to go out of business and give us product shortages. So we are trying to be fair in a way to get to the goal of the lowest fair prices as quickly and as surely as we can. So thanks so much, Kelly, for letting me be part of your communications process to your listeners. Thanks for inviting me onto the podcast.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Not So Different. To read more about the proposal to regulate the prices of biologics as an alternative to pursuing biosimilars, visit our show notes. As always, if you like the podcast, please take a moment to rate us at iTunes. Until next time, find us at centerforbiosimilars.com.